What shall I do? It's the rich man's question, but it's a key question at many points in our lives, isn't it? What shall I do? As a retired college professor, I'm used to dealing with this with students at that critical point in their life as they're thinking, what shall I do with my life? Shall I work to get a job that will earn me a lot of money? Or one of the ones that my parents have in mind for me? What shall I do? What shall I do? Shall I marry this person or that person or maybe not at all? When I downsize my house, what shall I do with my stuff? When I retire, what shall I do with the time that remains to me? What shall I do with my life? So often when we ask this question, what shall I do? We are constrained by our very limited imagination. We think only about those jobs that will earn a lot of money, or the ones that our parents have in mind. When we're considering the marriage question, maybe we only think about people of the opposite sex. Not saying that that's right for everyone to think about other options. But you know, for some people, it's life-changing to realize, oh, wait, maybe I'm not heterosexual. Maybe even I'm asexual. And marriage isn't what's right for me. And on that question of what shall I do with my stuff? Shall I downsize and rent a storage locker? Do you know how many really, really small towns have storage lockers? Brian and I drove through some of them. We went camping these last couple days, and I was just really struck by the presence of smart storage lockers in tiny, tiny towns. It's become a way of life for the American people. And I have no room to talk. We used to joke that we had students come into our office and look at our bookshelves and ask, have you read all those books? And Brian's standard evasive response was, some of them I've read twice. And I may just have books in my office that are still in boxes because I have no place to put them on my shelves. The wealthy man in today's parable, what shall I do? He never seems to consider options that aren't about protecting his own life and making himself more comfortable. He doesn't seem to look out at the community and say, you know, I've got more than I need. What does the community need? What do the people around me need? We have no glimpse that he even notices them. Hugely limited imagination and vision, constrained by greed and by fear, which so often underlies greed, doesn't it? I acquire because I'm afraid. I acquire because what happens to me if I don't have enough to protect my life? And so the rich man doesn't imagine other possibilities. And how often is that true of us too? I found myself, as I often do when I read this parable of the rich man, thinking about the poem Ozymandias by Percy Shelley. You may be familiar with this. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read which yet survive, stamped on these lifeless things. The hand that mocked them and the heart that fed. And on the pedestal, these words appear. My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. No thing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. Someone who made his life about accumulating his own wealth and power. And what is left? Ruin, desert, barrenness. What kinds of wealth did Ozymandias miss out on in his desire to rule the world? What kinds of wealth did the rich man in today's parable miss out on in his desire to protect his life? And if our lives don't consist in the abundance of our possessions, then what do they consist in? What's the alternative? What other kind of life might the rich man have imagined? What would have happened if he had invited God into his imagining? Last week, Gavin preached about Ohana, about this vision that he had encountered in Hawaii of a family, of inclusive, welcoming community. This is the kind of life that we're called to if we indeed set our minds on Christ and on the things of Christ. It's that kind of community. Now, with a caution, if we use this family image, as with every metaphor, we have to be careful because, you know, not every family is an ideal one. We recognize that. And even the family that's mentioned at the start of today's gospel is not an ideal one, right? It's a competitive family. You know, teacher, tell my brother to divide his inheritance with me. We recognize that. That greed and fear that can break families apart, too. But God invites us into a different kind of family, into a different kind of community, into the reign of God. And this is Ohana. It is mutual care, mutual love, mutual trust that God will provide directly or through community what we need. I've experienced that kind of community richly in these last weeks as Brian and I have been dealing with the troubles in our own family with our son's health crisis. And the outpouring of love and generosity from this community has been such a reminder of the reign of God, of the kind of life that God calls us into. We've had people generously give money to support us with our extra expenses during this time. We've had people just outpour their love and their prayers, and we have felt so embraced in the love of community. In these recent weeks, I've had other reminders of the kind of community that God calls us to. We just did our outreach grants here at St. Luke's, and you're going to be hearing about the organizations that we're giving this money to. But why are the outreach grants even possible? Because Peg Fulkerson left a bequest to the church. She left her house. And some of that money went into our general fund that supports our ongoing life as church, but a significant chunk of it, she specified, should go toward outreach in our community. And so her life's work continues in the ongoing work of this church, which tithes our budget every year to give to the community. And so our life as church is not simply about our self-preservation. It's about what are the needs of the community around us and how can we give to meet them? And part of that, a huge part of that, is made possible because of Peg's gift. Wealth shared, not hoarded. And love outpoured. Just a week ago, thinking of love outpoured, we had this celebration of life at Ona Beach for Elizabeth Bigler Lemke. And those of you who were there heard a lot about love outpoured, about what that kind of life looks like. We had people there from all over the world who came to remember and honor Elizabeth and tell stories about this generous person who poured out love on everyone she met. She will be remembered in a way that is so different from Ozymandias, right? She's remembered in every person whose life she touched because she saw each person. And when we talked about Elizabeth, I thought immediately of Brian Hanna, who comes up all the time around here. You know, he died a year after I came. And yet, he comes up all the time. Why? Not because he hoarded his wealth, but because he poured out love. Right? He poured out love. He gave so generously of himself. We often, as church, are tempted to think about when we have these what shall I do questions. What shall I do? What shall we do so that the church survives? And we focus on making sure that we have not only enough, but more than enough. I will say that I've seen far less of that in these communities than I have seen in other churches I know of. These communities here tend to live generously and with less fear, with trust in God. I believe that's the way God calls us to live. Not unwisely, not foolishly, but with trust, with discernment, with every what shall I do as community, as individual, asking, well, what is God calling me to do? What is God calling us to do? What are the needs around me? What do I have that can help to meet those needs? What gifts do I have? Not just of wealth, but of my talents, of my time. How can I enrich the community around me with what God has given me? And how can I be blessed by their generosity and love? What happens if I pour out my love? what happens if I live generously? What is God inviting me to do? Last week at our St. Stephen Housing Committee, in the other congregation, we had an interesting conversation. We took a shift from what we've been working on. We had for a long time been trying to explore ways to build affordable housing in our community. And we've looked at tiny homes and concluded that tiny homes would be really challenging to do in our climate in a way that's really sustainable and welcoming. And so we looked at, you know, maybe buying and building or repurposing. And we've pretty well come to the conclusion that we don't have the resources to do that here in this community where the buildable lands are so limited. We were looking at a lot in Newport that is $500,000 just for the lot. And we said, you know, that's a bit rich for us, for who we are. But we've been doing these housing grants with money from the state. And it's been just amazing seeing how many lives have been touched. A lot of the our ORI grants were for rapid rehousing of people who are currently homeless, unhoused. And it's been just wonderful what we've been able to do with that. We've gotten people into housing who haven't been housed for a long time. And in one case, we have sent somebody who was a trucker but who had retired and was living in his vehicle back to truck school to be recertified and to have, you know, more time doing something that he really loves, but that also will provide for him. And so we've seen that, but we've also done housing grants for families, and in so many cases, we've been able to prevent young families from being evicted from their housing. And it doesn't always take that much. But $2,000, the lack of that, can put a family out on the street. Right? And so we've been able to use these grants from the state, but we're also very aware that these grants from the state are going to run out. And we fully expect that we will have spent the money by Christmas. And so one of the ideas that came up at our St. Stephen Housing Committee was, what if we fundraised to build our own grant fund? We might not be able to do it at the scale that we're doing it with these state grants, but we can't expect necessarily in this fear-driven time that we will have that money from the state again. But what if? What if we worked on building our own housing grant fund? How many lives could we change? How many people in the community could we help? And so we're discerning. We're thinking about that as the St. Stephen Housing Committee, but we also talked about it as, I wonder if that could be a joint project between the churches to do this kind of work. And to think beyond just sustaining these communities to what can we give around us? How can we be driven not by fear, but by love? How can we live into the vision of the reign of God? So I've been reflecting on these things. What shall we do? What shall you do with the one precious life that God has given you? What shall we do with what God has given us as community? What does Christ call us to? what might it mean for us to live in mutual love and mutual trust. Amen.